For a long time, especially in the West, the Buddha has had a reputation for being a pessimist. And that chant we had just now would seem to confirm that reputation. The world is swept away, it does not endure. It offers no shelter, there's no one in charge. You have nothing of your own, you have to pass on, leaving everything behind. Everybody's a slave to craving. But you have to remember the context. When the Buddha first taught his first disciples, he told them, I found the deathless, and I can teach you in a way such that you too can find the deathless. A deathless happiness, that happiness has no restrictions at all. He didn't come in and say, I'm going to teach you how miserable the world is, and how there's no hope for happiness. He introduced his teachings by saying, this is all about happiness. In fact, a happiness that doesn't die. The happiness with no limitations. So when he's talking about the negative side of the world, he basically wants to make sure that you don't get stuck there. That you don't content yourself with the things of the world. There are better things in the mind. And there's a path there. The path may require you to put forth more effort than you might want. It may be more difficult than you would like. But the difficulties are then more than repaid. Even in the path itself, the path isn't all bad. It's not all hard effort. You're sitting here meditating. What does the Buddha say? You try to get the mind in a state of concentration. Or this sense of ease and rapture or refreshment. In fact, the ease and pleasure and the refreshment, those are one of the main points of getting the mind to concentration. So the path may have its difficulties, but it has its rewards, and it doesn't save all its rewards for the end. It's a good path to be on. You look at the things the Buddha asks you to do, in terms of virtue, concentration, discernment, they're all honorable qualities. They're all things you can be proud to do, good qualities in the mind that you respect within yourself. The Buddha's asking you to develop them even further. So there's a joy in being on the path. And if you learn how to take delight, as the Buddha says, in abandoning your unskillful qualities and developing skillful ones. In other words, if you find the challenge exhilarating, find the challenge really worthwhile, you're going to get to the end of the path. He says you have to delight in these things. The same way that you have a challenging game. Although here the game has some serious consequences. If you don't play it well, you just keep coming back to being born again and dying again and again and again and again. In the Buddha's description, the world gives you some pause. What is it like to remember a past lifetime? The Buddha said, you remember what you looked like. You remember your happiness. You remember your pains. You remember what you ate, and then you died. That's it. It's not much. In the ways of the world, he said, you have involved gain, but then they also involve loss. Status, loss of status. Praise, criticism, pleasure, pain. These are normal things in the world. And as you reflect on them, because otherwise you get content when the world goes smoothly, and get really upset when the world does not go smoothly. You're trying to feed on the world, and all of a sudden the world gives you garbage. So the Buddha says, reflect on this. Don't let yourself be satisfied with what the world has to offer. Because your mind, as you develop it, has much more to offer for you. So always keep in mind the fact that even though we have to deal with limitations. The goal that we're aiming at is not limited. And when the Buddha talks about things being inconstant, stressful, not self, he's not saying that you have to find your happiness in the midst of things that are inconstant, stressful, and not self. He's basically asking you to reflect on these things as you meet with them and ask yourself, are these really worth going for? There are a few cases when the answer is actually yes, in the sense that the path that we're working on is something we're putting together out of these aggregates that the Buddha says are inconstant, stressful, not self, aggregates like the form of your body, as you feel it from within, as you're sitting here right now, working with the breath, feelings, you hope to create feelings of pleasure. There are perceptions, the labels you apply to things that identify them, give them meaning. And here you're identifying the breath as the topic you want to stick with. There's fabrication, the way you talk to yourself about the breath. There's consciousness, your awareness of these things. And even though these things ultimately will show that they too are inconstant, stressful, not self, you're trying to fight against those characteristics for the time being. You're trying to make your concentration as constant as you can. Make your mindfulness, your alertness, your ardency as constant as you can. So you can give rise to a sense of ease and well-being. Get the mind under your control, so you can create a path that leads beyond the path. As for other things that are inconstant, stressful, and not self, don't let yourself be satisfied with them. To whatever extent they're useful in the path, you use them. But don't rest content there. Other people get the context all backwards. They think that when the Buddha talks about things being inconstant and impermanent, he means that we simply have to put up with that fact and say that if I'm going to find happiness, I'll have to accept the fact that it's going to be inconstant and impermanent. That's pretty miserable. But there are people who keep saying that over and over again, that the reason we're miserable is that we don't accept our limitations. I was reading just the other week someone saying that our problem is that we would like to have a permanent self. And as long as we want something permanent in life, we're going to suffer. But when we finally realize there is nothing permanent at all, we say, okay, no problem, I'll accept that. But it's really sad, given the fact that the Buddha does promise you follow the path, and it leads to happiness that has no limitations. It doesn't even have the limitations of space and time. That's where we're headed. So remember, it's not the case that the teaching on impermanence or inconstancy forms the context, and then you have to find happiness within that context. It's the other way around. Buddha has you take your desire for happiness seriously. And hold in mind the possibility that it's promised in a third noble truth. There is a total end of suffering. And it's not just a blank, but it's a state that the Buddha says is permanent. Refuge. The names he gives indicate that it's a state of consciousness that's totally without limitations. It's happiness, it's bliss. It's a sense of freedom. It's true. In other words, it's not going to disappoint. And it's the ultimate. And the John Sawat would say, once you attain that, there's no question about who you are, who's experiencing it, or where it's being experienced. The happiness is that all-encompassing. So this is one of the reasons why we respect the Buddha. He has this respect, this desire for true happiness. And it makes us realize that there will be things we have to give up for it. But the things we give up are really not worth all that much. We've given them worth. But when you really look at them, there's not much there. So that's the context, the search for happiness, the desire for true happiness. And then the teachings on inconstancy are there to remind you that if anything that's inconstant is not the goal, that may be the path there, in which case you develop it. But then there comes a point when that too will have to be put aside. As the Buddha said, the path is constructed, it's fabricated. This is another misunderstanding that sometimes comes up, is that the path is somehow just a natural process, that if you get out of the way, it will happen on its own. We're even told that the Buddha said, when the Buddha would use only images of natural processes to describe the path, but he doesn't. There's one where he compares the path to a chariot. And he goes through and he lists all the different parts of the chariot. The chariots back in those days were pretty complex. They're considered true works of art. And this path we're doing is a work of art. It requires that we do things that we haven't done before and let go of things that we haven't let go of before. It also promises that we will find a happiness that we haven't found before, realize what we haven't realized before, attain what we haven't attained before. So keep the context in mind. And when you hear the passages that talk about the negative side of the world, remember they're there because the Buddha has a really positive purpose. He's like a doctor. You go to the doctor and the doctor says, where does it hurt? You don't accuse the doctor of being pessimistic. He asks where it hurts because he's got a cure. So remember that. When the Buddha introduced his teachings, it wasn't to say, I'm going to teach you how miserable the world is. He started out by saying, I'm going to teach you the deathless, and if you follow these teachings, you can find the deathless too.